It's showtime.
It's Friday!
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this Friday on the front porch, the 26th day of April, 2024. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network. You can find us at headon.live. That's where you go if you'd like to, among other things, check out the stream, the podcast, or, well, participate in the Merry Wacky Zany real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the Great Globe Round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. And if you are listening to the podcast, please take a moment to like each episode, subscribe on a couple of platforms, leave a comment here and there. It really, really does help to make other people aware that this wonderful, independent, non-commercial, no buy gold now ads broadcast effort of 20 plus years exists. And if you do pop into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, if you're listening live, well, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. We'll be happy to see you. That would be Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo, all capably mindful. And I'm there too. I just don't talk a lot there or type a lot there because, I got about 6,000 tabs open right now. Between the producing and the talking and the phone answering and all of that, well, you can see how, yeah. All capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger in Oregon, who just posted a photo in the chat room of some of his horticultural expertise. Something's coming up prolifically. Roger's a hell of a gardener. It's Friday on the front porch, and every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So as a consequence, we say thank you to our 26th day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you . Sometimes the app opens slowly. Thank you to Charlie. Thank you so much. Thank you as well to Emilio. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you for all for being partial sponsors of the program. And so our fundraising goal now stands at $1,525 to finish April fully funded. It's going to be a race to the end. Ralphs wants to get things started with a $25 challenge for cricket. This story's in the stack. God, every time you think the maggots can't get any worse, they do. a $25 challenge in memory of Cricket, the dog that Christie the Gnome, maggot governor of South Dakotistan and alleged fornicatrix with Corey Lewandowski, shot. All these people. We'll get into it in greater depth. But that would get us down to 1475 if somebody wants to help remember poor Cricket. God, it's just awful. They're just awful. Of course, out in MAGA, well, you know, I mean, sometimes you just gotta do that kind of thing. It was a puppy. I read the story earlier, and I just ran in and sat down next to the golden one and put my arms around him and gave him a big hug. And stopped by and told Kyle and Sox and Lucy that I love them, and that'll never happen to them here because there are no Republicans in this house. No maggots. Gee whiz. Thank you, Ralphs. Hopefully that'll get met, and hope, I don't know, maybe put together an end-of-the-month Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle. Who can say? But it is Friday on the Front Porch, and here in about 52 minutes, we'll go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Ferengi, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table and gather about it each and every Friday to talk about the issues of the week. I suspect that we'll probably have some discussion this evening about what happened in the Supreme Court yesterday. The reverberations, the fallout from that is still being felt. And now we wait and see how long it's going to take them to reach a decision and how thoroughly they screw America. And there seems to be a split of opinion as to, and this is all tea leaf reading. No one has any more expertise or any more knowledge than anyone else. But I'm kind of rooting for the I'm kind of rooting for the four ladies to band together. And as long as Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan and KBJ all agree to be ladylike about it, maybe the handmaid will join in too, and they can civilly tell those pasty-faced old men to shove it. I guess I'm just mean that way. I have a dispatch here from Joey and the gang to get us all started. The gang is all here in Balmer today. By the way, MLK All the Way, Part 2. Several of us chartered a bus from D.C. that's headed for Philadelphia for a political event tomorrow night.
So I wanted to see the Key Bridge, or what's left of it, as I love tall structures.
Well, a giraffery would. Yeah, I think that bridge is a little off-key. Oh, dear heavens. Well, at least Joey Two the Kangaroo is still around. We have our famous Story Bridge in Brisbane, Queensland. Banana benders, you know. A cantilever bridge similar to the Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. The bridge connects Fortitude Valley to Kangaroo Point in Brisbane, Queensland. Our country has 53,000 bridges, which our government funds liberally for the purpose of safety. The bridge opened in 1940 as it was built during the Great Depression with funds coming from socialism. Yes, the funds came from a public works program during the Great Depression. We care about our people so much that in the early 2000s, when there were mass suicides from people jumping off the bridge, our government installed hotline phones that to this day still go directly to suicide assistance operators in hope of saving lives.
Well, thank you, Joey, too. Great job. I think the great Martin Luther King stated, let's build bridges, not walls. Unfortunately, Donald Trump, instead of fortifying our infrastructure and reinforcing some of this country's 600,000 bridges, Trump spent more time trying to build walls, literally and figuratively, during his administration.
Well, thank you all very much. The Francis Scott Key Bridge has a lot of meaning to me because when I lived here, I would drive up from nearby Glen Burnie, head north over the 695, what do you think this is, Joey, California, and go over the Scott Key Bridge to a town called Dundalk, Maryland. Most people who live in Dundalk work on the docks. I had the coolest job ever when I worked on the docks of Dundalk back in the 1980s. I was part of a group of people that would go onto one of those huge cargo ships, and we would drive cars off the ship to a holding area about 2 miles away. I drove every kind of European car imaginable off that ship, including Jaguars, Mercedes, BMWs, Volvos, and Audis, just to name a few. No Porsches, Joey? Yes, the Scott Key Bridge was important to me as I went to work crossing that bridge and would take the Baltimore Harbor Tunnel home at about midnight. I was very sad to hear that it had crumbled after a barge lost control and crashed into it. This morning, I went to the gate of which I once entered and worked.
Yes, and I, Jeffrey the Giraffe, have begun a movement to have the Francis Scott Key Bridge and the Key Highway in Baltimore renamed, considering Francis Scott Key was a racist, and the song he wrote contains a racist remark in the second verse of the song, which is never sung. Hell, as far as I'm concerned, they should not sing any of the damn song, because the music for the song was stolen from a beer-drinking song back in Merry Old England.
You mean like the song 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall?
Yes, Junior, you have the right idea. Only in Trump's case, they could sing 91 indictments of clear crime on the docket wall.
I don't think that scans, Joey.
However, I'm backing the initiative to have the bridge renamed, with the new name being that of Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass was a native of Maryland who was born into slavery. He lived from 1818 to 1895. Douglass was clever, and he escaped slavery, educated himself, and made himself into one of the greatest leaders in American history.
And as, you know, I'll add editorially, as Nitwit Nero pointed out some several years ago,
more and more people are finding out about Frederick Douglass.
Now, on the other hand, Francis Scott Key was a slave-owning racist POS.
Donald Trump is not clever, and he won't escape his 91 indictments of clear crime on the wall. Everybody sing now. No, there's no singing. We have a $1,525 fundraising goal here. Junior, stop with the giggling. Great job, guys.
I had to laugh when the judge threatened to arrest Trump for his behavior. Hell, it appears Trump has put himself into some kind of a rest. Sorry.
Oh, Rama the Llama. Yeah, maybe his buddy, that my pillow guy, can send Trump a pillow or two. I no longer stand for the flag, as I think the flag, Joey says, is the symbol of this country's imperialism. I was at an Atlanta Braves game a couple of years ago, and this elderly lady was appalled that I did not honor the flag by standing for the national anthem. She told me that I needed to find Jesus and respect this Christian country by standing for the flag. I said, find Jesus? I'm sorry, I didn't realize Jesus was lost. You lost him again? I told her as I was driving on Interstate 75, I did not notice any amber alerts on those electronic signs indicating Jesus was lost. She tried to continue talking, but before she could say another word, I informed her that this country needs to change its national anthem and the Atlanta Braves need to change their name. This has been Joey's Journal for a Friday on the Front Porch, April 26, 2024, with Giraffrey standing tall and waving his flag in hopes that Balmer Bob notices the flag and contacts Joey so we can go to lunch at Jimmy's Famous Seafood tomorrow at noon. Balmer Bob, if you're out there, email me. Joey Bay, Joeybay, @live.com. And this concludes the journal with a $25 Build Bridges, Not Walls challenge. So with the challenges on the table, we could actually get down to $14.25. In our desperate quest to end April fully funded. Thank you, Joey, and the gang. And thank you for being there, Joey, too. You're a voice of decency and kindness and sweetness and light in amongst those boys. Yeah. Note coming in from Dave and the Blind, a reminder and an extension. Hey, gang, just a note, my subscription challenge is on the table until Saturday tomorrow, so the overnight crew gets a chance. I'll add $20 to any new monthly subscriptions, first month of $10 or more. Christine and I want to pay this out. People, come on, let's go. Your buddy Dave in the blind, happy Friday. So if we can get a new subscriber for the first month, Christine and Dave will bump it by $20. So, you know, golly, we could use a new subscriber on the 26th or the 27th. It would be awfully helpful. And thank you. Thank you, Dave. Now, where to begin? I don't like to begin the program on grim news, but since we've already got Christy the gnome out there blowing away puppies, Jesus Christ. Well, let's deal with that. She put it in a book. She's deemed to be a front runner for Nitwit Nero's vice presidential running mate. And as I said a couple of days ago, realistically speaking, considering the shambolic nature of Nitwit Nero's existence right now, well, whoever his running mate is must certainly know that if he wins, they've got a decent chance of becoming president of the United States either via mortality or via the 25th Amendment. Sword of Damocles and all of that with him.
Sword of who?
But she's got a memoir coming out because she feels like she's presidential timber. It's called No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward. That's a lot of... How do you get that on the front of a book? Did she not have an editor? I mean, granted, there's that old saying out there that every editor should have a pimp for a brother so he'd have someone to look up to, but editors do come in handy. And sure would have been handy there. The Guardian got hold of the book and began... And I feel so sorry for whatever pixel-stained wretch got tasked with reading this thing. I don't know how you could even begin to do it without at least a Jeroboam of old panther piss, preferably bottled in bond and at least 120 proof. Cricket was a 14-month-old wire hair pointer. And in the book, Christy the Gnome says, "I hated that dog. Cricket was dangerous to anyone she came in contact with. She was less than worthless as a hunting dog." You know what? Dogs aren't born bad, just like people aren't born bad. Dogs turn mean because people make them mean. Our beloved golden one is a rescue. We got him when he was a little short of 2 years old. He's not a little short at all. And he's got some issues. So Annette, in particular, has done just a magnificent job of letting him know that this is his forever home, that he is loved, that he is adored, that he is special and good. And he's become an absolutely wonderful boy. Although today he did see something that looked a lot like a murder hornet or one of those one of those cicada wasps or whatever. Might have been a sand hornet. It was big. And Shadow and I were sitting on the bed. We were sharing snacks. And he was crunching happily away. What he loves, He loves it when I take a piece of American cheese and put a little... They've got fun-size bacon strips. Did you know that? I didn't until I saw them. So that's what we get now. I take one fun-size bacon strip and roll it up inside of a half a slice of American cheese. So he gets two, one slice of cheese, two. And we were sitting there having his snacks. And he was just happy and drooling a little bit. And, all of a sudden he stopped,
and he kind of jutted out his lower jaw so you could see his lower incisors, and he alerted, just ramrod straight spine, sat straight up, focused on, and I looked because I was like, what, was there something wrong with the cheese? And no, I looked over and he was alerting on that stinging creature crawling up the wall. And he kind of gave a low, it's okay, it's okay, good boy, it's all right. Auntie's fine. You don't have to protect me. Because Annette is Mama. I'm Auntie. And he settled down. I said, you want this? And, yeah, there's another. Yeah, oh, sure. And he got his other roll up. But we heard some things along the way that children were allowed to climb on his back and ride him, and it was obvious he had been screamed at, and so he was a little jumpy. Thank God he was nowhere near Christy the gnome. In her horrible passage, she says, Cricket grabbed one chicken at a time, crunching it to death with the one bite, then dropping it to attack another. It was like a trained assassin. She, at the time, she had put an electric shock collar on Cricket. But somehow or another, the dog got out of her truck when she stopped to talk to a family on the way home, and attacked the family's chickens. She whipped around to bite me. And she was the picture of pure joy while she was killing those chickens. At that moment, I realized I had to put her down. So she went back to her pick-em-up truck and got her trusty shooting freedom protector and took Cricket to a gravel pit. It was not a pleasant job, but it had to be done, and after it was over, I realized another unpleasant job needed to be done. So since she was in a killing frenzy, she went home and blew away a male goat. Dragged him to the gravel pit, too. I guess there's a gravel pit somewhere in South Dakota stand that's a... Ah, God, it's a killing field. Her daughter got off the school bus and said, hey, where's Cricket? Mommy blew his brains out. Go do your chores and make your bed, or you'll get some of the same. God, she's so... Oh, Emilio.
Hasta la vista, Terrier.
Rama the Llama's not feeling very ding-dong about that. Nice try, though, Emilio. The emojis were worth opening the email for. Oh, my God. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Christopher. Christopher just met Ralph's cricket challenge. Christopher said, for every dog that haunts her nightmares. I hope Cricket's there barking her head off at her every night. I live in a rural state. I understand things like this. But she sounds like she's proud of it. We hadn't castrated the goat, so I went ahead and just killed it. I have a friend who raises goats. And, in fact,
I was there one evening when she, I ran into her over in town, and she had the little baby goat with her. And the baby goat just gambolled up to me and was like, "Hey," I'm like, "Hey." Thank God Christy Gnome wasn't there. Bang! Really, Christopher? We're going to do that early, this early? Roxanne, you don't have to put out the bug light. It tasks me. It tasks me. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference. Please tell the Keebler Ferengis. Roxanne, your imitation of Bugged Out Shadow sounds eerily similar to your Moscow Mitch. Have they ever been in the same room at the same time? Now that you mention it, Christopher. Emilio adds, my dog was a terrier and I miss her so much. F that lady. Apparently Corey Lewandowski is, but no, pass, thanks. I'm not that kind of girl. Well, great minds. Brendan just wrote and said, hey, Robin, what do you expect from a woman that fucked Corey Lewandowski? Peace and love, lady. Peace and love, Brendan. Yeah, not exactly a woman of discriminating standards, I know. Poor Cricket. So there's another $25 challenge on the table. We're now down to $14.75. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you, Ralph. Joey's challenge is there, and would get us down to $14.25 if somebody meets that. Thanks, y'all. So there's that. Poor Cricket. And she did, Christy the Gnome, Corey Lewandowski squeeze. Ugh. People responded to the news of six-gun Christy with revulsion. Rick Wilson chimed in and really opened up a can of whoop-ass on Christy. Christy Gnome, he said, is trash. Decades with hunting and bird dogs and the number I've killed because they were chicken sharp or had too much prey drive is zero. Puppies need slow exposure to birds and bird scent. She killed a puppy because she was lazy at training bird dogs, not because it was a bad dog. Not every dog is for the field, but 99.9% of them are trainable or rehomable. We have one now who was never going in the field, but I didn't kill her. She's sleeping on the couch. You down old dogs, hurt dogs, and sick dogs humanely, not by shooting them and tossing them in a gravel pit. Unsporting and deliberately cruel. But she wrote this to prove the cruelty is the point. He's right. Some dogs aren't. No, they're not suitable for hunting. And I've mentioned in the past the fact that we are frequently visited by, it seems like, an ever-growing flock, I said flock, of various fowl, peahens, guinea fowl, turkeys, hens, roosters, ducks, a duck. And Shadow is not at all fond of them. He's definitely not chicken sharp. He's chicken. We have an old plastic hen, you know, decorative. And she just sits out there in the front yard, and the rooster comes over and sweet talks her. We've had merry moments sitting there and watching that rooster. Hey, baby, why aren't you talking to me? And Shadow wants nothing to do with them. And one individual replying to Rick Wilson said, I didn't like Christy Nome before I knew she was a dog killer, which is one of the worst things I can imagine someone doing. I'm a dog lover, and I know some will see it differently, but I'm boiling with disgust. Another individual said, when I was growing up, we had a big lazy cat. He had a kind of dramatic, delayed reaction meow that made us think he was impersonating William Shatner. Oh, whoever you are, Ramalama. Ding dong. Loved him for 17 years. Looking back, he couldn't hunt, but we didn't shoot him. Because we're not cruel psychopaths. It does seem pretty psychopathic, doesn't it? Another individual said, well, this is why she's such a good fit for a party that's become complete trash. Bill the Bloody Crystal, who was a big fan of the slaughter in Iraq and got everything wrong, but has since at least recognized that Nitwit Nero is no one who needs to be anywhere near the levers of power in this country, said, knowing Donald Trump fears and hates dogs, Christy Nome revs up her VP campaign by writing about killing her own dog, Cricket, a 14-month-old wire hair pointer. Then this. Someone else. Christy Nome doesn't work either. Nobody's put her down. Well, there's putting down and putting down. I mean, like Brendan said, Corey Lewandowski. Grant Stern, a political commentator, said, move over, Dr. Oz. The Republican Party has a new puppy murderer, and this time we didn't find out because she got sanctioned by the federal government for it. Christy Nome thinks her psychopath story will attract another greater maniac to her side. And here we are. It's spring, and a certain South Dakota governor's fancy turns to thoughts of bloodshed. Yeah, I know, Flavio, I mentioned that. The very same day, she killed a goat, you know, for being a goat. Same day, Flavio says, Nome is a psychopath, a bully, and a coward. But I repeat myself. Well, sometimes the repetition serves a purpose. So that's a puppy and a goat. Then there's this. We talked a couple of nights ago about the little 7-month-old baby girl who was delivered by cesarean section from her dead mother's womb. Her name was Sabrine. Say her name. Sabrine. They tried to keep her alive at the makeshift hospital. But at 5 days old, she passed away. You'll recall that the Israelis had blown up her home and that of her mother. Her mother was her home. And killed 19 people in 2 adjacent houses because I'm sure they were all Hamas. Emirati Hospital was the makeshift hospital where they took little Sabrine. And Dr. Mohammed Salama said her lungs weren't able to process oxygen because she was just a 30-week baby. I followed this story, and I still can't find any pro-life maggots who are willing to condemn Israel for rocketing or bombing or missiling a 7-month-old pregnant woman. Not a peep out of the entire forced birth cadre in the United States. By the way, little Sabrine was 30 weeks. Full gestation is 40. Full term. Little Sabrine would have struggled to survive in the best hospital in the world. And yet the maggots and the forced birthers are out there shrieking, a 6-week-old clump of cells has a heartbeat! Dr. Salama said, every day we have a sad story. Every day we have a horrible story. This baby right here, his father's died. This baby's mother has died. Another two babies in the ICU. One of them came, and we cannot know, sadly, if his mother or father is alive. The interview took place in an NICU as the doctor gestured toward various incubators, cribs. The Israelis slaughtered 16 children in 2 airstrikes last weekend in Rafah. Speculation exists that as soon as, with the Passover holiday being over, that they will get busy and just finish the slaughter in Gaza. As little Sabrine lay in her incubator, her daddy's mother, little Sabrine's grandma, spoke to her as she lay there struggling for life and said, I swear I will lock you inside my heart. You will live in blessing. Our partners in peace, the Israelis, have massacred 34,356 Palestinians, the vast majority of whom were unarmed, and 2/3 of that number, roughly 22,000 human beings, have been women and children. I found it especially galling to see a quote from John Kirby earlier today as I tuned into my filthy morning habit, when he said, this is not a genocide. This is a war that has too many civilian casualties. And I swear I expected the shade of George Orwell to appear standing and looking over the shoulder of John Kirby. Israel, meanwhile, it says, oh, we're precisely targeting Hamas fighters. Yeah. I saw a picture of little Sabrine in the incubator, and I swear I did not see a tiny little AK-47 or a tiny little dynamite belt in her in her crib. Over at Common Dreams, earlier in April, they published an article talking about something that we discussed here on the program, namely the fact that a genius, Wile E. Coyote, super genius, who accidentally outed himself, good luck, advocates and advocated for the use of AI. You know, the same AI that depicted Mother Teresa fighting poverty as Mother Teresa in a kung fu stance taking on scantily clad, half-starved African children. That AI. Yeah, the Israelis use AI targeting systems to identify Hamas targets. But they also have a policy that a first option is bombing suspected Hamas fighters in their homes. And an official policy of the Israeli fascist government is that it is absolutely A-OK to kill as many as 100 civilians for every Hamas target, and that that's precision enough. Tell us again, John Kirby, how this is a war with too many civilian casualties and not a genocide. So there's that. I know. A follow-up to the story of the 14-year-old little girl whose mother allowed her to starve to death in West Virginia. God, I really didn't mean for this Friday to, on the front porch to begin as a little ray of sunshine. But some documentation has emerged. The little girl was emaciated to a skeletal state, according to local deputies. Her grandma, speaking to WCHS-TV, said the poor thing had only been outside the house possibly two times in the last 4 years. Outside the house. But the Boone County school system has documents that showed that Julianne Stone Miller, who is facing charges of felony child neglect resulting in death, put through the documents in February of 2021 to homeschool the child. The form said the woman said her two daughters had elderly grandparents who they were with daily. And this is a quote, "We think homeschooling is the best now with the COVID-19 in order to keep our family safe." The current superintendent of Boone County Schools, a man named Matthew Riggs, has gone to ground and is not saying anything. He will not divulge whether Julianne Stone Miller even did the bare minimum of submitting homeschool student assessments that the actual law of the state of West Virginia requires. A publication called West Virginia Watch inquired of the Boone County Schools for any records showing if teachers had even had contact with CPS about the little girl. And Boone County School Superintendent Riggs, Matthew Riggs, sent nothing back and refused to even answer a question as to whether or not any such records even existed. Earlier this year, in February, a member of the West Virginia House of Delegates, Sean Fluharty, who's up in the northern panhandle, Ohio County, and is a Democrat, tried to get an amendment onto a bill, something called Raley's Law. Raley Browning was a child who had been abused and neglected after her parents pulled her out of public school and homeschooled her. Rayleigh's Law said that parents couldn't take their child out of school to homeschool them if a teacher had ever reported them for abuse. Meanwhile, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, who wants to be the junior senator from West Virginia, said, in no way, shape, form, or fashion did I know anything about whether CPS, the Child Protective Services, had ever even been to that home. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. By the way, Delegate Fluharty's been introducing Rayleigh's Law for 5 years now. But the maggot supermajority won't let it through. This year it did get through the House of Delegates. And then the Senate Education Committee didn't even take it up to consider it. Curiously enough, the committee chair in the Senate, the Education Committee, is a woman named Amy Grady. She's from Mason County. And she's gone to ground, too, and is completely mum about why it didn't get taken up in time. Meanwhile, Republicans all over West Virginia's government are, I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Harumph, watch your ass. And so if you heard the program from a couple of days ago, you'll know that there was a woman named Kathy Krause on the TV news segment who said, we don't want to put more limitations or intrusions into the privacy of homeschool parents who have taken their children out of government schools. I have a feeling the goddess of irony is going to do something horrible to Kathy Krause. Because after she said that, Kathy Krause proudly stood with Riley Gaines, the professional grievance merchant who is absolutely pissed off that she didn't get to come in fifth place all by herself and instead had to tie with that Leah Thomas. And so Riley Gaines is running around West Virginia again. In this case, barking and grunting about trans girls in sports, which led Kathy Krause to declare, I stand strong with our girls and the movement to save women's sports. And as I noted, what a damn pity that that little 14-year-old girl wasn't playing high school sports so Kathy Krause could have stood with her instead of declaring that we don't want to infringe on the rights of parents who have taken their children out of government schools. That little child had been in a government school, maybe she wouldn't have starved to death. The irony is brutal. Amen, Tracy. Tracy says, this is why homeschooling is problematic. I included the clapping because she clapped back at me. Flavio, homeschooling. Don't some states require minimum qualifications if you're going to homeschool your kids? One of my nephews was homeschooled because he's autistic. But both his parents are professionals with graduate, postgraduate degrees. Flavio, in West Virginia, all you have to do is be a parent or a grandparent, you know, a custodian of the child, and have a pulse. You can homeschool your kid here and teach them about all about when the Mexicans attacked Pearl Harbor. And when the hordes of Germans came pouring across the Rio Grande to attack the Alamo, and how Jesus H. Christ led the charge up San Juan Hill, and miracle Jesus math to you know where one plus one equals three. Yeah. It's heartbreaking, to say the least. Tragic, horrifying, criminal. And it's not just criminal for the mother who's charged with child neglect resulting in death, a felony. Punishable by, 1 to 5 years in the pen? But it's criminal to suggest that the state has no business checking in on a homeschooled child. See, Raley's Law that we were talking about a moment ago only got through the House of Delegates in 2024 because the homeschool parents, who were members of the House of Delegates, had to tweak it. Okay, I'll bet they tweaked. Flavio says, my homeschooled nephew lives in Michigan, Ann Arbor. Oh, you know, civilization. But down here in West, by God, Virginia, Flavio, we got us some freedom. And it includes the freedom to starve a 14-year-old girl plumb to death. Leah, New York, wouldn't have starved if in government schools. You mean a school where Republicans have decided that lunch is not required? You have a point. But then again, I've heard time after time in meetings and conferences and the like, from teachers who talk about spending their own money to pack backpacks with food that they pass out Friday afternoon to children they know are going home to families with no food and they will not eat over the course of the weekend unless they have that backpack. Oh, God. You know, if I do manage to find my way to the legislature, we're going to have a lot of work to do. I'm going to have a lot of work to do. As for Joey unloading car, Jessica, in the Greater Rochester Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere said, what? No triumphs? Joey unloaded all those cars and there weren't any triumphs? I mean, credit with the Jags, as they were also British Leyland, but tell me there was the occasional TR7. Jessica, in the early 80s? No, late 80s? It was the late 80s, not the early. And Jessica says, I still owe you the $10 from last night, but you're talking about rescue dogs. I'll add another $5 for Cricket and Shadow. Luna, our standard poodle. I love standard poodles. There's nothing standard about them. Is a rescue and had a very unhappy first year and a half of her life. I'll spare the listeners the details of her neglect, as it will piss a lot of people off. But like your pupper, Luna has a lot of love in her forever home. I'm absolutely certain she does. Oh, I met a lovely young four-legged lady last spring. I was down in Hinton, and I popped into a botanical shop. Wonderful place. I took Annette a couple of tiny, tiny little succulents home, and they're still alive. And when I walked in and the bell rang, it looked like there was nobody in the store, but all of a sudden this beautiful champagne-colored pupper popped up on, she stood up on her hind legs behind the counter, put her front paws crossed over each other, and looked at me, "May I help you?" And I learned that her name is Pearl, and she's half standard poodle and half golden doodle, or labradoodle. And, oh, she stole my heart. That's the sad thing. I don't even have the hard, crunchy exterior anymore. I'm just entirely soft marshmallow center. Can't help it. Brother Deacon Asa, you're not wrong. Given the foregoing, I'm guessing, Brother Deacon Asa says, that Christy Noem is counting on that presidential immunity thing. She's obviously giving us signals as to what kind of president she's going to be. And, you know, just thinking about that and the fact that whoever his vice president is going to wind up being president. It was a long time ago. I think it was during the Great Purity Wars of 2016. 8 years. When I said that America badly needs its first woman president, and I remain of that opinion. But what I said then remains true now. We do need a woman president. That glass ceiling needs to be shattered all to hell. The glass should be so shattered it should be reduced to the sand from which it came. But it's one of those situations where you don't just want to tick off a box. Look, woman president, Sarah Palin, Christy Noem. At one point in time, and this proved to be wrong, I'm not afraid to admit when I'm wrong, I had said that Nitwit Nero was trying to tee up 2024 for Precious Princess Iwanka Madaddy Trump Kushner. I was wrong. She might have actually been better than Christy the Gnome or Nancy Mace or, God knows, Mrs. Governor Ambassador to the UN Secretary of State. Haley. Wouldn't it have been awesome if we could have had President Hillary Rodham Clinton from 2017 to 2021? Wouldn't that have been great by comparison? Have you ever taken a moment to think about how President Hillary Rodham Clinton would have handled the COVID outbreak? I feel comfortable saying that we wouldn't have more than a million dead Americans from that horrid virus. Oh, and by the way, speaking of viruses, we probably have to talk about this. I'm not freaking out yet. Bird flu in the milk supply. I'm sure you've seen this by now. And, of course, public health officials reassuring a nervous populace that no, the pasteurization of milk kills all pathogens in the milk. Thank you, Louis Pasteur. But it's worth noting that one of the present fetish objects of the maggots is freedom milk. Oh, really? Not free milk, freedom milk. You ain't having the free milk. I mean, that's communism, especially if you're giving it to children at schools. But freedom milk, you know, being able to buy and sell raw, unpasteurized milk. Well, now it turns out that 20% of the dairy cattle tested by the FDA across the country, well, eight states, 20% have bird flu. Yeah. And that there are bird flu particles in some milk samples across the country. And how would you like your coffee, Roxanne? Latte, breve, please. Hold the bird flu. And I'm not trying to be alarmist. I'm not trying to get anybody scared. But there are also reports that at least one dairy worker, dairy farm worker in, of course, where else? Because takes ass, you know, job-killing regulations, actually caught bird flu from working around an infected dairy cow. His symptoms were said to be mild. He got a case of conjunctivitis. Meanwhile, I was out today, and I was driving down one of the little back roads, a little shortcut to where I was going. Wanted to check in on... I've been invited to my first baby shower Sunday, and I wanted to find out, you know, where the mother-to-be is registered. And I come around a curve in one of these... Now, we call it a hard road here. Also known in West Virginia as Good Road, because it's got pavement. And I came around a turn, and there was a guy doing the thing where he's, you know, slowed it with the hand, palms down. You know, I wasn't flying anyway, but, you know, slow down, and I did. And then I realized why I was slowing down. There was a feller in a pair of Carhartt overalls with a T-shirt on who was walking a couple of cows up the road, being followed by a Fayette County animal control vehicle. And, you know, when you live in a rural area, things like this happen. It's like the tourist who was out walking on a Sunday morning and saw a farmer driving a wagon load of poop. And he stopped the farmer and said, "Why? That don't smell too good. Why you got all that poop on there?" And he said, "Well, I put it on my strawberries." And he said, "You should come to where I'm staying. We get sweet cream for ours." Never mind. But you see these things in rural America. I remember the morning many, many years ago. I kind of wish Annette was back here to tell the story. I was getting ready for work, and I hear, "Robin? Robin? Robin?" "Yes, dear." I came quickly down the stairs. She said, "Why is there a herd of cattle in our yard?" And I said, "Don't know." "Well, whose are they?" "Don't know that either." Well, we found out later that it was the father. The cattle belonged to the father of a man that I had put away for life without parole for murder. But he was plenty friendly. "Yeah, thank you for letting me know my cattle got out. I think they may have knocked down the fence. They've been known to do that from time to time." So, you know, cattle in the yard, cattle on the road. It's the spice of life here in Appalachia. By the way, it's Appalachia, not Appalachia. And here's a great way to remember that. I just ran across this today. I'd never seen it before. If you say Appalachia, I'll throw an apple at you. Huh? Clever, huh? Right? Yeah. Billable Rick says, "Robin, like Blutarsky in Animal House, while you're on a roll, don't correct historical inaccuracies. Did we give up when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?" Shut up. He's on a roll. That's exactly what I was thinking. Nice call, Billable. Matt in San Francisco with a note. Christy, meaning Christy the Gnome out in South Dakota stand. Ooh, I didn't think of it that way, but yes. Matt asks, don't most serial killers start with murdering small animals? Well, sometimes they go straight to murdering, but most of your serial killers start out with torturing and then killing small animals. Ralph says, yes, we need a woman president, but not Kristi Noem, Nikki Haley, Sarah Palin, etc. Not Michelle Triple X Bachman. Goodness. Marsha. And certainly no, Emilio, not Sporkfoot, not marginal trailer queen for president. No. But you're correct, Emilio. Oh, Robin, says Billable, you have the makings of a new big B-52 song. Cattle in the yard, cattle on the... No singing, Roxanne. But, no, I... What would that be, Billable? Cow Shack? Get in my trailer, it's as big as a whale, and it's about to set sail. I only have a ding-dong for you, Billable, for that. Randy Radar reminds us, and this is an unpaid product placement, Califia Farms Organic Barista Oat Milk, available at ThriveMarket.com. Thank you. Thank you, Randy Radar. Yeah, it looks like, I think we got plenty to talk about. What do you say we go ahead and go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Packlids? And, see what's on folks' minds. I'm really curious to see if we want to talk any more about the Supreme Court case yesterday, because I think there's still more to be said. And we are connected. Let me make sure that we're into the board. Hey, Roger, are you there? There we are. I think we're in there now. I hope. Anybody? Bueller?
Yeah, we're connected.
Okay. Hey, Jeremy, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, hello, hello, hello.
Who was? Oh, there's Roger. Okay. Roger, you got to tell me, what was that you had in the starter trays?
Let me go somewhere else for a minute.
Okay. Well, at least I didn't get told specifically where to go. That's always a good beginning. By the way, Cattle, Matt in San Francisco says, my husband and I were driving up the coast to Jenner, a nice coastal town located where the Russian River empties into the Pacific Ocean. We were driving a smart car at the time when next to us on the dark highway appeared a very large cow just trotting along. She was bigger than our car. Not sure where she was going. Well, she was going wherever she damned well wanted to go. When you're bigger than a smart car, you kind of get the right of way, I think.
Does it really matter? She was just moving.
You know, I was kind of hoping that wasn't going to happen, but I saw it coming. I resisted the urge, but I should know better than to expect that you would, Jeremy.
I have a 12-year-old at heart.
No, I have the heart of a 6-year-old. It's pickled in a jar on my desk. Sorry, that was horrible. Oh, Mark Twain quote coming from Lee in New York. The more I learn about people, the more I like my dog. Yeah, and that other one, if I'm sure I'm going to botch it, but if heaven were gained by merit and not by grace, our pets would go in and we would stay out.
Yeah.
Thank you for the cowbell for Cow Shack, Ralphs. Much obliged. Oh, Llama Bell. What did I... Yeah.
I think I might be up and good now.
Wonderful.
Okay, your question about the pictures I posted very early in the regular chat room?
Yes.
All right, the top one has six plants of cauliflower in the first bed. The second bed is lettuce, snow peas, and chard. And the far one is six broccoli plants. The second picture is leftover carrots from last year. The third picture is blueberries and what are going to be my green beans. And the patch in back of that is the asparagus. And the last one is a replant for eight artichoke plants that got... The old ones got frozen out with our ice storm, and the next bed is empty, and then there's a few carrots that are left over from last year.
That's a nice collection.
Well, we try to eat fresh veggies. We ate our first lettuce last night for dinner that I've harvested.
Ooh.
We've been eating the carrots left over from last winter. The blueberries are set in fruit, and we've been eating on the asparagus for over a month.
Oh, I love fresh asparagus.
Oh, it's great. What I like to do is fire up the barbecue and lay the asparagus spears on and brush them with Italian salad dressing and rotate them around till they're hot all the way through and still kind of crunchy. And... just munch them down.
Sounds delightful. When we were going to D.C., I was there with Ferg one year on spring. And there's a place on Capitol Hill on Massachusetts Avenue called Cafe Berlin. And it was Spargel season. And they did a salad of white asparagus and strawberries with a lemon poppy seed vinaigrette dressing. And I came home and tried to recreate it. Got pretty close. And damn, is that good.
White asparagus is just too damn hard to grow. Too much maintenance. I mean, it's the same as green asparagus. There's no difference in the plant.
Yeah, you grow it under shade so the chlorophyll doesn't develop.
Yeah, and it's a little bit more tender, but I just don't want to have to either cover it with a super thick bed of mulch or tent it with a black plastic and, you know, that kind of stuff. I just want to plant it, weed it, pick it.
Eat it.
And then when the stalks get too small, you just let it go, and it builds up all kinds of storage stuff in the roots to give you a good crop the next year. And in many ways, I'm a lazy gardener. I always look for the easiest way to do something as opposed to getting too crazy with lots of maintenance. I mean, it takes enough time out of my life already to be dealing with this. And I don't want to add more work to what I already do. I've already got eight tomato plants inside that greenhouse hoop house. And I'm going to put another eight plants outside. And my wife's already threatening to shoot me because last year I averaged 10 pounds of tomatoes per plant. So we're going to have a lot of tomatoes this year.
Oh, that's heaven to me.
But I love them. I can eat sliced tomatoes for lunch and dinner and be happy. That homeschooling thing that you were talking about earlier. As most people know, I spent 20 years as a school teacher. And I'm not saying there aren't some parents that manage to do a decent job homeschooling their kids. It's just that I've never found one. Every kid that came back into public school that had been homeschooled was behind in one or more, usually all, subjects when they came back into the public school system. I'm so tired of a parent coming in, oh, my kid, I taught him algebra at home. Okay, fine. Let me give him a test. And you give them the first semester final test, and they flunk it. And then you say, well, they need to repeat algebra. Oh, no, I taught them at home. Bullshit. I don't know what you taught them, but you sure as hell didn't teach them algebra. And the history people had the same problem. Oh, I taught my kid U.S. history at home. I don't. And this is, I mean, I quit teaching in 2005, and long before the maggot bullshit started up. That's not to say the Tea Party wasn't around, but I don't know what curriculum they were teaching or how they were doing it. But as I say, I never met up with a kid coming into public school from homeschool that was up to grade level. Like homeschool, and back a long, long, long time ago, I'm talking back in the 60s-ish, there was a fellow that Mom taught with when she was teaching at Trinidad School. He got married, moved down outside of Ferndale, and he was a credentialed teacher, and he also worked in the mill, and they wanted to homeschool their kid, and he said, well, I work during the day, but during the day, the kid's doing farm chores, that kind of stuff, and I'll teach him at night. Oh, no, if you homeschool, you got to be able to use the normal school day to teach. And he was denied permission to homeschool. I really don't know what all ended on that, because he died shortly afterwards. And since he was the friend, not the wife, and the wife was friendly and all that, and Mom and Dad were friends with him, not his wife. But they were living on the homestead that her grandfather was granted, I think it was her grandfather, maybe great-grandfather, was granted as the homestead deeded, and the deed, I saw the deed, it was signed by Abraham Lincoln as pay for service in the Union Army. And they were on, you know, the old family homestead. Huge sheep ranch down south of Ferndale. And, you know, I guess you got to kind of know Northern California geography to know where Ferndale is. It's a neat little Victorian town off the beaten path on the Eel River. Well, quite a ways from Eel River, because when the Eel River floods, the town doesn't flood. But it's just a nice little funky town, and it's called the Victorian Village of Ferndale. Beautiful little place.
Well, since you bring up California communities, I've got a story here. The dateline's out of Bakersfield, of course. I know that's substantially south of where you're talking. Kern County. One of the Kern County supervisors, I guess that's like county commissioners in other places. A guy named Zach Scrivener. Who lives in Tehachapi, which I immediately recognized from because I'm a fan of Little Feet, and I've been from Tehachapi to Tonopah, just played right there in my little MP3 player in my brain. But cops showed up at Zach Scrivener's house in Tehachapi, and they had been told he was armed and suicidal. Because his aunt had dropped the dime on him to the county sheriff's office. But when the deputies got there, it turned out that he'd actually been stabbed by one of his kids in the upper torso a couple of times. Upon further investigation, one of his kids stabbed him because he was trying to... sexually abuse another of the children. The deputy said they seized a small quantity of psychoactive mushrooms. And And, yeah, sexual assault of a minor. Now, I went all the way through this this article from KVPR, which I guess is associated with NPR. And the guy, you know, the guy's a county supervisor, blah, 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 blah. But the one thing that the pixel-stained wretch who authored this program apparently did not think was relevant to the story was the fact that Zach Scrivener is, everybody say it with me, a Republican, a maggot.
That doesn't surprise me anymore.
And he and his wife, Christina, have four kids. And two boys and two little girls. And we don't know yet which one of them stabbed their daddy trying to keep him off of one of their siblings. Good Lord. I should probably note that Zach Scrivener, being a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian maggot, is not a drag queen. He's not a trans. He's not queer. He's not gay. He's not bi. No. Just a maggot. Now, that's California.
Maggots are everywhere.
Well, yeah, they are. And, you know, in pockets, too. I mean, Bakersfield. Craven McCarthy. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, but Bakersfield's in that southern end of the Central Valley. And back when I was driving a truck, once you crossed over the hill coming out of the Bay Area, headed south on I-5 going into L.A., you could get five or six. I had a radio in my truck that I could just push a button. It would go to the next station, going to the next station. You could push that next station button, and I could pick up five AM stations all playing Rush Limbaugh, and not a single one of them was carrying Tom Hartman. You can get Tom Hartman in the Bay Area, but once you crossed over into the Valley, it was nothing but Rush Limbaugh until you got into L.A., and then you could find a station with Tom Hartman on it.
Well, that's because they love America there in the southern end of the Central Valley, Roger. They're not commies.
Yeah. It's all the way up. I mean, Sparky could probably talk about the mega crowd in Redding, Red Bluff. I mean, I live in Eugene. It's probably one of the most liberal cities in Oregon. And because of my pending fight with the VA, which I know is coming, and the American Legion doing things for their members in fighting with the VA over the Agent Orange disability bullshit, I figured I'd join the American Legion. So I went and joined the American Legion. And I've stopped by a couple of times. And there are a couple of people in there that appear to be fairly popular. I don't know their names yet because I haven't spent around that much time wearing Trump hats. Now, why any veteran would support the man who called veterans suckers and losers and who badmouthed John McCain for getting captured and wouldn't even get his hair wet to go to a World War II memorial in France? Why would any veteran even think that he was a good person?
Not to mention, Roger, right before he called them losers and suckers, he was standing in front of John Kelly's son's grave and asked, why'd he do it? What's in it for him? How much money do you make? I just don't get it.
Yeah, but a veteran in favor of Trump? My God, I thought they taught everybody in boot camp honor and courtesy and compassion.
Been a while for you, hadn't it, Roger?
Well, it's been a while since I was in boot camp, yeah. But, I mean, the people that belong to the American Legion are Vietnam-era veterans. The World War II veterans are all dead. And besides that, the building they have for their American Legion post is nowhere even close to ADA accessible. In order to get in, you got to have your key card or ring the doorbell, that kind of bullshit. And as soon as you open the door, you got to go down 8 stairs, and it's a steep, narrow staircase to get to the social quarters. And if you want to get to the kitchen area from the other outside entrance, you got to go up a half a flight of stairs. There's no disabled entrance at all to the Legion post, which blows me away because I guess there's no attorney up here that's running around and nailing people for not having ADA accessible, or maybe if it's a private club so it doesn't need ADA accessibility. I have no idea. But I'm not going to be spending a lot of time there, but as soon as I get my denial on my disability, then I'll go down there and talk to the post commander and get put in touch with whoever it is for this area of Oregon to help me fight with the VA.
Well, I feel confident you'll win. They're just going to make you jump through some patented Scott Marinoff flaming barbed wire hoops to do it.
Yeah, well, I'm not asking for 100%. I only want 30. And for the conditions I have, each one of them are normally considered 30, so I should get 60%. But we'll see what happens. I can use the extra $500 a month and also the commissary privileges that come with it and the free fishing license.
Oregon I've also seen a rise in the maggots trying to reframe the George Floyd death like they have been for years, but now they're really pushing, oh, it's fentanyl. Even on the coroner report clearly says it was lack of oxygen, asphyxiation, crushing of the windpipe. And the thing they're basing their story on is a secondhand coroner's report that had nothing to do, it wasn't even official.
Yeah, it was just a tourist visit.
Well, I just got hit on a January 6th person. The person wasn't there January 6th, but a January 6th excuse maker. Well, it was nothing going on. Even the Capitol Police were escorting him around the place. I mean, and here's a picture of the Capitol Police escorting the shaman dude down the hallway. Now, I don't know whether the picture was before or after the number of him doing his thing at the speaker's chair. But, you know, okay, so there's some Capitol Police officers were involved in January 6th, too. They should be hung up on charges.
Just not only that. Oh, go ahead, Roger. Keep going. Sorry.
Just because he was a cop doesn't mean he can't be an insurrectionist. Go ahead, Kevin.
Not only that, but that, what's his name there? Stephen, the guy that put out the memo, cutting the balls off. Well, I'm sorry, bad reference there.
It's okay.
Taking away the riot gear and everything. Remember that guy? He put that Miller. He put that memo out to all the D.C. Police there, saying they couldn't have riot gear, they couldn't have this, they couldn't have that, and you know. That guy needs to be strung up because, you know, I'm not saying it would have made a world of difference. I mean, but they would have had more stuff to work with. And also that something about they couldn't call. There was also something more than that, though, something about who they couldn't call, like maybe the National Guard or something like that. I'll have to look it up. Chris Miller, I think his name was.
The National Guard was told not to respond to anything.
Right, and he's the guy
commanded to not get involved in it.
And I have not heard word one about this guy, you know, with all everything going on with, you know, people in Arizona, they're just indicted and everything, and the fossil, you know, the stealing the election and everything. He was right there. I mean, that was like the guts of it right there, that memo. And I haven't heard anything about him facing the music for anything. So.
This January 6th thing is a hell of a lot bigger and deeper than what's been charged so far.
Yep. It's more stuff's going to come out. You know, just hope the Supreme Court doesn't. Don't even get me started with them, boy. All right, I got to co-cut my lawn for about an hour, and I'll be back. All right, you guys?
All right, thanks, Kevin.
I'll check in a little bit. All right, bye.
Bye. Well,
I thought I'd update us a little bit. Ralph's serving as the Horn ad hoc Zach Scrivener Research Department uncovered this when the deputies showed up at Zach Scrivener's Tehachapi home. Not only did they find him stabbed, having tried to sexually assault one of his children, but, well, they also found a cache of something or like more than 30 firearms. Those poor children. You know, when you've got 30 firearms, that's not Second Amendment. That's a fetish. I mean, was he waiting for the herd of 30 to 52 wild hogs to? I don't know. Note coming from Roger in the Blind. Roger, you need help, and I'm here to give it. When Christine was applying for her VA disability in the Army, and they kept denying her, we went to AmVets and got a veteran services officer, a guy who knew where all the VA skeletons were buried. He also is willing to go to bat for them because when she was poisoned with PCP, the Army did not stabilize her and did not contact her family and send her home with cash, or thousands of dollars in cash on a bus in a psychotic state. You need to go to AmVets or Veterans of Foreign Wars, Warrior American Legion might be able to help. They may have a VSO attention. Thank you, Dave. Thank you kindly.
Roger. Yeah, I'm still waiting. I filed my claim in September, and I've just gone through the outside independent verification person assigned by the VA, and now their reports are going to get sent in. And then yesterday I had to leave for a while because I had a dermatology appointment, which that's a long story. By the time I get the appointment, it's cleared up. And then it comes back in another 18 months. And then by the time I get to see the doctor and then get referred to dermatology, it's cleared up again. Well, this time they finally gave me the phone number to the desk, and the orders are written that if I call, they're going to book me. But the dermatology person's only there on Thursday. So anyhow, there's all this kind of bullshit going on. And it's a condition that I've been suffering with it for 60 years, ever since I got to Guam. Anyhow, he did give me some good ideas that the prostate cancer should be an automatic 30%, and the other ones is just figuring out where it is. I just expected a denial to start with and then have to fight with him. So I'm trying to put my ducks in a row by joining the American Legion to get their help. And then there's the service officer for here in Lane County that I went to originally file the claim. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to organize my plan of attack for when I get the letter of denial. And then that's when I'll go to the American Legion service officer. I'll probably go back down to California because I know the guy down there that deals with the Veterans of Foreign Wars and fights with the VA all the time. and I'll go see him, and then I'll do the veteran service officer, and I'll have a three-prong attack coming into the VA from three separate sources to start fucking with him. But I don't plan on hiring the attorneys that advertise on Facebook. You know, all we do is win claims. You don't have to pay us anything until you get your money, and we only take 20%. Or yeah, I've been getting bombarded with various lawyer companies that want to help me with my claim. But I'm going to win this one eventually. It's just,
yeah, it's the eventually part.
Yeah. I mean, I hope to still be alive when I win. I mean, I'd rather have the money than my wife get it. Not that I'm greedy or anything, but it'd be nicer for me to spend it than her. I'd rather spend it with her, not only her.
Makes sense. No argument here.
So.
Oh, by the way, I should add, for anybody who cannot get into the old holler tree via the button at the top of headon.live, the stress line's also open, 844-843-4676. We've passed the halfway point of the program, and it would be great if somebody could step up and match Joey's challenge, MLK All the Way Part 2. Joey kindly made that at the beginning of the program, and that would get us down to a $1,425 hole as we try to finish April fully funded and get all the necessary bills paid to end the month. And at this point in time, that's the phone bill, the internet bill, some more power bill, health insurance, and once in a while we eat food around here, whatever. Yeah. Steve, I don't know if you can unmute or not, but I just wanted to make sure you're okay. Steve earlier said that he was muted because he was in a cab, but Steve said he's not feeling good, feeling kind of flu-y and icky and achy and miserable. I just want to know if you're okay. Let us know whenever you can, okay?
Hey Robin, I'm okay. I'm almost home, so.
Okay, I can hear it in your voice. No, you are not your usual peppy self.
I just ache. I don't know what happened. I just started aching all over. I can hardly sit up. I can hardly do anything. So, but yeah, other than that, I'm okay. I can listen.
Yeah, apart from that, apart from everything else, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
Yeah, exactly.
You have a COVID test at home?
Yeah, I actually just did one recently. I'll probably check that, see what's going on there. Thanks for that, Roger. I do actually have one.
Because my last bout, well, my only bout with COVID, this what you're talking about is just a really bad flu. Was what I had, and I tested positive, and 3 days later I was fine. But that the beginning of it was just I felt really, really crappy. Not that my lungs were plugged up or anything. I just felt crappy, and I tested positive, and 3 days later I was tested negative and fine. But I'd also
check that out.
Well, the flu bug, the flu bug that went around, my dear sister Terry down on the Gulf had it a couple of weeks ago, and everything you just described, she described, Steve. So, and she tested negative for COVID all the way through it.
But, I remember you talking about that kind of bad flu going around. I thought maybe that's what this is.
I'd almost bet.
Yeah, because it crept right up on me. I felt fine today, went to work.
Haven't been working with any dairy cows lately, have you?
Well, there is one in the office next to me.
Well, I hear there's a bull that's somewhere down around Wall Street.
There are lots of bulls in Wall Street. But one last thing before I go back on mute. I have to say, last night was among the best programs I've ever listened to.
Oh, thank you. I felt pretty good about it too.
Oh, it was fantastic. Fantastic.
I felt like the analysis was really solid. And that's not me necessarily, you know, tooting my own horn. And I think I had nightmares about Hacksaw Jack. That voice, I just, God.
I couldn't help but think of that Hacksaw Jim Duggan, that old wrestler, wrestling guy who carried around that 2x4.
Well, we got there first, among other things. Today, as I watched the coverage, everybody else was saying the same thing we said last night, you know, because we're so far out in front of the curve, it's like we're on straight road, that it looks like the handmaid may join up with the three other women on the court and give what for to the pasty-faced old men. But the other thing that I kept seeing is everybody agreeing, you know, beginning with my filthy morning habit onward, that this trial, the Jack Smith's trials, can't happen before the election.
But there is that little tidbit of a hearing to determine which of the charges were personal and which one were presidential, to allow Jack Smith to pare down what they are, which will put a bunch of evidence out in the public knowledge prior to 45 appealing which ones are personal and which ones are presidential, to run back up to the court, which does prevent the trial from occurring. But if the hearing to determine which charges are appropriate with the evidence, there's no judge, I mean, no jury, no finding of guilt or anything else, but it would at least get a bunch of the evidence out and people could be called in to give testimony to help the judge and the district attorney, well, Jack Smith, determine which charges to press forward with, which would at least give the public some knowledge of what it is. Now, true, it's also tipped the hand to the defense on the evidence that's going to be presented. But I thought that was an interesting take on how to work around this absolute delay tactic.
Well, everything that I read and heard suggests that, they're gonna have to work. The maggot judges are gonna have to work really hard to figure out a way to just grant him immunity, and that most people I read or heard said probably won't happen, but they'll try to get off into the weeds and play night baseball over the public versus private acts, or the official versus private acts, and that would be the reason for the remand to the D.C. Circuit.
But anything having to do with the election is not an official presidential act.
Well, I mean, that's what you say, and that's what I say, but they get the final say. It's like that old saying, you know, the Supreme Court isn't last because they're right. They're right because they're last. It's the fact that they get the final say. And so this thing, I still have this sinking suspicion, this sick feeling in the pit of my stomach, that this thing could ping pong back and forth from the Supreme Court to the D.C. Circuit in an epic, you know, an epic volley, and that the sun may burn out before we get there.
Well, I think Joe Biden just ought to send SEAL Team 6 out and send him to Guantanamo and call it an official act. And then if the Supreme Court didn't like it, he could resign and we'd get Kamala. But if they didn't let Joe Biden do that, then they have to let the orange one go on trial. I know that's logic, and logic does not count with the Supreme Court.
Well, one legal expert, and again, I want to reiterate, this is all just speculation, but a former federal prosecutor interviewed by Newsweek, Nima Rahmani, said he expects Barrett to side with the liberals in rejecting the appeal and to join in a ruling that our current system works well and that Trump's radical proposal was unnecessary, saying, I think the justices will send the case back to the lower courts to determine whether the fake electors and events leading up to the Capitol riots were official acts. How? I don't mean mechanically how. I mean, they're campaign events. The whole thing was a campaign event, and I honestly can't I can't fathom how they'll do it.
Well, what about the idea that if he did it out of the Oval Office, it's normal, and if it was done outside of the Oval Office, then it was a campaign event. So the folks at the Woolard Hotel are clearly campaign events, but because Trump was in the Oval Office or speaking out front on federal property, that's official presidential shit, which pretty much clears him of everything. And all his lower henchmen get screwed.
What does it say about our justice system when Gorsuch can try to draw a line of distinction between January 6th and a civil rights protest?
Well, I mean, I think the best commentator for that one, Jeremy, would be, a certain professor.
You dick!
Right?
Pretty much, yes. Yes, I agree 100%.
Speaking of,
I heard him say that. My eyes rolled back in the back of my fucking head.
And then the comparisons being made between what's going on college campuses right now and the blow up over Kent State back in 1970. Totally different. Totally, absolutely, totally different. This one is totally infiltrated with outside non-students on the campuses and tremendous amounts of damage. And the blow up after Kent State was a student driven, mostly veterans that had come back from the war and were the leaders. And there wasn't a whole lot of painting on buildings. There wasn't the college I graduated from and where I was involved in the 1970 shit. Is totally shut down, and they're probably going to cancel graduation the whole nine yards. And they have taken over buildings and barricaded themselves in, and the school has shut the water off, and the toilets are backing up, and there's been all kinds of vandalism in the buildings and all the rest of it, which didn't happen back in 1970.
I do recall Dr. Bill O'Brien telling me about how the fact that he was a doctoral student at the University of Wisconsin at the very same time that, what was it, the chemistry building got bombed?
Did they ever find out who did it?
I don't recall. But I wanted to add that we have to be careful about disinformation. Just as an example, the Daily Mail, which is a rag, a scandal sheet in England, is publishing absolute untruths. This stuff has been debunked already, but this claim that, of course, George Soros is funding the campus protests. It's absolute garbage.
Well, poor old George has to be going broke right now because he funded Hillary Clinton's campaign. He funded all he's paying all the immigrants to come up from Guatemala and El Salvador through Mexico. He's paying for all that to happen. You'd think the guy'd be broke by now.
Another ridiculous rumor that I saw promulgated is that this has to be a vast conspiracy because so many of the tents are of the same make and model. But the fact of the matter is, if you go on Amazon looking for a cheap tent, it'll direct you to exactly the tents being used. And not far away from at least one campus, there's we just got our first one, it just opened a few weeks ago, a Five Below, where you can buy one of those tents for $15. And Walmart has them for $35. This isn't something that's being orchestrated by George Soros, nor did you say that. But there is a difference between the students who are protesting versus assholes coming in from outside.
One of the big marches I attended down in San Francisco, 69-ish, there were, I swear to God, they were undercover San Francisco cops. Our permit had us marching down Geary Street. Well, we started at the Ferry Building, then went up, caught Geary, marched out Geary. We were headed out to Golden Gate Park. And our permit had us restricted to the three lanes of Geary Street headed out toward the park. And there was traffic on the other side. Incoming to the main city was on the other side. But we had that outbound, all three lanes, the sidewalks, et cetera. But we were out in the street. And there were these people saying, oh, no, we got to cross over into the other lane. And I was kind of a monitor type person. And I told him, no, get back over there on the right. Our permit says we're staying in the westbound lanes. We're not taking over the eastbound lane. Oh, we got to put it to the man. All that rhetoric that you hear. And there were four or five of them in different places in that march attempting to get people to violate our permits. And I have seen that over and over and over so much. Tom Hartman talks about when he was a member of SDS, there was a guy that came in all the time that was wanting to go blow up and burn down the ROTC building. And Tom Hartman's convinced he was an undercover cop. Operating undercover from some agency somewhere. It's easy to say it was an undercover cop. It may not have been. But there are organized people that come into what start out as a very peaceful and very constrained protest over a particular issue. And then come in and try to destroy it. And I see this destruction of the movement. I mean, the idea of free Palestine, okay, fine, I've got my prejudice against Palestinians, but leading that aside, what Bibi Netanyahu and the IDF doing to the people in Gaza is terrible, absolutely terrible. But that doesn't mean that the people I went to school with and an ex-girlfriend that I'm still in touch with, who are very clearly Jewish, I don't hate them because they're Jewish. They hate Bibi Netanyahu as much as I do. And I just see this outside agitator shit. Just to me, it's just obvious and blatant. But then maybe I'm a conspiracist. I should go listen to QAnon or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, don't do that. It'll make your brains leak out your ears.
Anatole just put in the chat room, BB is heartless. And it's true. It is absolutely true. That man, if he had not gotten involved in this war, he would have been ousted. There were tens of thousands of people marching in the streets of Tel Aviv before October 7th, trying to get rid of him because he's so bad. Somebody else?
Yeah. Tracy, are you just listening, or are you talkative?
No, I am. I am now. I'm fine. Hi, y'all. I'm driving, and I was just waiting for somebody to, you know, anything for me to comment on. But I am. I have been driving to get home for an hour, almost an hour, and I still have 42 minutes to go.
So what? You're about 10 miles away.
I'm only 12 miles away from my house, and
God, I was being sarcastic.
No, I know you were, but 12 miles away, and but I had a good day. I went to an event today representing the Social Impact Center for the Watts Community Labor Action Committee. Told people about our services, put in a slide for future clinics, and to get the expungement thingy going. So we are doing stuff like that. So, and I made some good contacts with other CBOs, which are community-based organizations. And that are mostly like they're grassroots and abolitionists. And so, because part of my project is getting information about partnering with abolitionist-based, grassroots-based CBOs for us to partner with. But whenever like they have events for us to work in collaboration, this is all about collaboration, peer support, being in community with other people who are going, nobody's case is exactly the same, but people who who are justice impacted. So, and on a side note, Robin, so yesterday when I was because there was something, I don't know what was happening with the TuneIn app. I don't know if it was the TuneIn app or if it was the feed yesterday, but it kept bouncing and doing the head-on.com, and so it would interrupt the show. And Norm, because I don't think it was TuneIn, because when TuneIn breaks with a commercial, it picks up to wherever, it interrupted. Whereas yesterday and this afternoon as well, it would just do the station, your station announcement. And then it would tune in like 5 seconds, like 10 seconds at least. And I didn't hear what you said about, you learn stuff and about KBJ not being ashy. Yes, because she is the queen of the shea butter contingent. No black woman worth her salt will ever, because see, the ash sneaks up on you. You could be perfectly fine. And then maybe you go somewhere, I'm going to try on a pair of shoes or something will happen. And you take off the socks or the shoes and there's the ash. So we never leave the house without some kind of moisturizing. And, depending on the time of the year, for me, I carry a small container of shea butter just in case. That part.
Well, okay, so you've pointed out where the next maggot conniption will come from.
Oh, what, does she carry shea butter?
Oh, no. Somebody gave her a free tube of shea butter. She's corrupt.
She's corrupt.
But what about KBJ shea butter? Leave poor Fappy alone.
Right. So, and like you said yesterday, Slappy is not going to fuck with KBJ. Because she will end him. He will... what she would do... Because see, she's carrying the whole, you know, black women you know, saving the world and justice for Anita Hill vibe going. So if he even even thinks about looking at her sideways, oh, woe unto him, because it will not end well for him at all. Because it's just like, no, it's just. Oh, and I thought about you this morning when I was listening to, you know, I listened to the news and traffic while I was working. And of course, I know these people listen to you, sis. I know they do. Because it was
sometimes I honest to God think it.
Because there was a trial lawyer on, so I listened to KNX 1070, which is a CBS affiliate, right? So they had, and I could tell he was a brother, but he was a trial expert trial attorney or some such thing as that. And one of the things he was saying was about they're going to kick it back down, you know, they're teeing it up, kick it back down to the Court of Appeals and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, you motherfuckers, you're listening to my girl, but she ain't getting paid for her brilliance. I think that this really upsets me more than anything, that I know these people are listening to you, and they take your knowledge and your research and your thoughts, and then they rebrand them as their own, but they're not giving you, know, fuck your props. I want you to get paid.
Well, speaking of props, I kind of knew the fix was in when Joe got his own bill on My Filthy Morning Habit.
Say that one more time.
I knew the fix was in when Jehoshaphat Scarborough got his own bell.
Oh, bitch! What?
You did? Oh, well, you're probably driving then. So, yeah, he's got a bell now. That he dings every now and then. That's why we had to rebrand the cowbell as a llama bell when after Tom and Sonny San Rafael sent Rama the llama to me.
Okay, I was wondering why. Oh.
And she's Rama the Llama, so that whenever whenever we give one out, it's Rama Llama Ding Dong.
Okay. See, now, thank you for the context. Because I'm like,
context is everything.
Righty. I just thought you decided to change shit up. Okay. I feel you. I got you, sis.
Now, to be fair, Joe's bell is one of those bells like on the front desk at the front desk of a hotel. You know, you tap it, ding, ding, ding.
I don't care.
I don't care.
Don't care. You know, I'm not. See, you know, yes. What is the imitation is the best form of flattery? No, the best form of flattery is getting a bitch paid. You know, if you're gonna imitate my ass, pay me.
I will not fight you.
No. Or like my mother says, I'm with you when you're right. You know? It's like... speaking of the event, because y'all know me well enough to know that I don't care about white people's feelings. I mean, I love my white allies. I love y'all. But I don't care if what I say, especially if it's the truth, or if anything that I say in the furtherance of doing stuff for my community is going to upset folk, I don't give a damn. Like I think I said, I'm going to get a T-shirt that says white people's tears, especially white women or something, or white people's tears are my elixir. I don't care. So anyway, so we're at this event. And I was a little distressed that a couple, that there weren't more turnout for our, you know, black elected officials, because this is a very large event. But so there was a white elected official and his aide, right? So it's me and Ollie, and we're sitting at the table, and I'm watching this man. Now he went to all the different booths, but he was just about to walk by ours. I'm like, hello. I'm like, yes, I'm talking to you. So he came over and I'm like, hi, council person, how are you doing? Because I think it really, but you know, besides the fact that I was very vocal about getting his attention, the fact that I knew he was a council person. And so I, you know, and I introduced myself and my patriot, and I said, you know, I told him about our organization, and he's like, oh yeah, so yes, definitely, we need to exchange information. I'm like, blah 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 blah. It's so funny, you know, because I'm, you know, y'all know I'm very new to LA politics and being like, I wouldn't say like in an inner circle or anything like that, but seeing how shit works. But the beautiful thing about even though I am new to this lifestyle, I wouldn't say lifestyle, but to this, you know, part of my life, I am old enough not to care about what people think again. And I will speak out and say shit. Like yesterday, I was at an event. It was a kitchen table event for a person who is running against, if you guys don't remember, Kevin DeLeon, who was on those tapes 2 years ago, talking about Black people and Indigenous people. And he is just a horrible individual. You know, he is not a good person. He does not care. And I also have to watch what I say. That could be, oh, she said this. No. You know, he is just, I don't see that he cares about his constituents. But the woman who is running against him, I see that she does. And so one of the things I was saying is about, you know, because it was a kitchen table event, it was for, I was an invited guest to give my views on what we need to, what people need to do, in my opinion, for community engagement. What kind of endorsements, and so I said, I am looking around, and I am the only Black person in this space right now. That's not a good look. I said, especially for the people, for somebody who is running against a man who basically said that Black people, you know, was working, you know, in order to take away what remaining power we have, you know, Black representation in City Hall. I said, so it is up to you to acknowledge who he is and said, yes, I am not Black, but I am a person of color, and I understand your concerns, and I want to build coalition with you. Because even though the population of Black Los Angeles is definitely shrinking, we're still here though. And I'm not even talking about like going to Black churches or anything like that, because Black churches, again, I can't really say the power of the Black church, but I know it's nothing like it was when I was going to a Black church and stuff like that.
Well, but you got to be careful, because those are often, and a lot of people don't know it, but those places are often more conservative than some.
Exactly.
Southern Baptist churches.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, like I said, if anything, reaching out into these community spaces, like, you know, the barbershops, the, you know, barbecue shops, wherever, like I said, but and just to show, and having events in, you know, like I said, there's really no more predominantly Black neighborhoods anymore. Especially in Isabel's district, but there are Black people still in these communities. And we need to know that you care about us as well. Because Isabel, when she wins, she would be the first Filipino woman, well, first woman, period, but she would get to represent that district, but she would also be the first Filipino woman on city council. So that is amazing. And she's brilliant. And so, and by the way, Robert, I did take her, because I sent you a picture of the red beans and rice, well, the red beans and the greens. So I took the side, because they were asking for side dishes. And, you know, like I said, I understand people are vegan and I understand people are vegetarian, and, you know, I don't eat pork and stuff like that. But I'm sorry, you cannot make red beans without some pork in that beef. So I did not only the smoked sausage, but a ham shank as well. And let's just say there was nothing left.
You understood the assignment.
I understood the assignment, and I also understood that since there was going to be a lot of the people that were going to be at the meeting with Filipino, I know on authority that my Filipino family, they love them some pork. I mean, that can't be everybody, and everybody that I asked, they're like, girl, you got pork in? Because I let people know there's pork in this. So I don't, oh my God, I'm eating pork. I let people know it's pork. And
of course, if you lived closer to God's country, you'd fix those red beans and rice with Kaneka sausage.
That part. Yeah, I had to settle for Hillshire Farm.
I understand.
But like you said, if I lived anywhere near y'all where I can get that shit from the stove, not the store.
No, I speak the language.
You know, then it would be Kaneka sausage. But since I am not fortunate enough to live in a place where they actually have it, on the, you know, in the meat department at the grocery store, then I just have to settle for the next best thing. Well, it's probably not even close to the next best thing, but what is available to me, the red beans and rice.
Nothing better than red. So, but I got to ask you, because, first of all, you know, you were talking about, Karen tears. This is the opposite. None, you know how the maggots love to own the libs?
Oh.
Well, I don't know if this is true or not, so, you know, I just want to be straightforward about it. This guy posted and said, I've been dreading this post for a while now, but I finally must admit that I've lost a substantial portion of my life savings investing in Trump media. I was unable to continue this slide and sold the majority of my stake this afternoon at $26.55 per share. This is a disastrous fall, resulting in a loss of nearly $450,000 of my retirement savings. I am now forced to return to the workforce at age 76. Please, family, learn from my mistake and do not put everything into one stock.
Aww.
But I did want to ask you, because I've been following this for a few days now. What's your take on USC completely canceling graduation?
Well, First and foremost, they should not have disallowed the young woman who was the valedictorian to cancel her speech. And so, as someone who just graduated 2 years ago, who refused to graduate in 2021 when I could have, I extended school so I could make sure I walked, because we didn't have a public graduation until 2022. And a lot of the people who are graduating this year graduated from high school in 2020, which meant they could not, you know, participate. They didn't have, you know, 2020, 2019 or what have you, who were not able to have a graduation. And now they finally have the opportunity to walk the stage, regardless of whether they're getting their master's or whatever, or what have you. And now, because USC is a chicken shit U.S. university as far as kowtowing to the powers that be, they're going to get what they deserve. Unfortunately, the students are going to be the ones that suffer, because it's not fair, and it did not have to happen.
Well, the fact that the young woman who was the valedictorian She wasn't screaming death to Israel. There was no from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
No.
She objected to the slaughter of women and children. And frankly, if you don't object to the slaughter of women and children, there is something fundamentally wrong with you.
There is some, and that has been my argument from day one. If you cannot see what is happening and have empathy, like I'm wearing a t-shirt from one of our favorite places, Robin, the Bitter Southerner.
Oh, yes.
I love their shit. And the t-shirt that I am wearing today says practice radical empathy. Okay? I need to send a shirt like this to the dean. I'm not spending the money for people at USC. Because those motherfuckers got more money than I'll ever see in my life. But anywho, practice fucking radical empathy. Okay? Just as I was tuning in to the show, just as you were talking about the baby who was delivered by cesarean, but her lungs hadn't developed well enough so she could live outside of her mother's womb. And of course, they had to cut her out of her dead mother's body. And I was listening to this morning, yet another news report. They were talking about, food insecurity and certain conditions. And one of the things they talked about was famine, and how because of what's going, the Palestinians, or if they're not in famine, they're pretty fucking close to famine. That's in another realm past food insecurity. But the fact, I appreciate them people reporting it, but what I don't appreciate is the people who are reporting it is not saying, this shit needs to stop. I don't appreciate the fact that we are constantly sending, that there was an aid packet that was approved that is still funding Israel killing innocent people. At what point do we say enough is enough, Netanyahu, you fucking war criminal, crimes against humanity, motherfucker. And if I wasn't driving, I would be clapping as I said that shit. A clap through each syllable. Why? So I am all for these protests. Now UCLA, because it's a public school, because they actually have people camping out on campus. They have a encampment right now. And nobody's fucking with them, but there was this one asshole this morning. He got up early this morning with his music and to wake them up, right? Because he's a dick. And he called the people that are part of the protest at UCLA. They're the bullies, sis. They're the bullies. Because they're executing their constitutional right for freedom of expression and to speak truth to power. So I am for it. I am sitting back with the popcorn and the glass of red wine. Even though I don't drink red wine, but I'm just watching how this shit unfolds. But so what they're doing at USC, they're canceling the main commencement, but I believe that they're having by departments or what have you. But I really feel bad. Okay, so you guys, I went to USC for my dental work, right? So the two young people who worked on my teeth, they won't have a graduation come next month. And they worked hard, and I was not the only
person. And it's a private school, and they paid out the gazoo for that education.
That part.
I mean, I swear, and look, what drives me crazy out of it, Tracy, is the tissue paper thin pretext of it all.
Yes! Oh!
Nobody believes the excuse that they put forward.
Right. For the sake
like the young woman said to this day when she was interviewed on MSNBC by Eamon Moyhelden, She said, to this very moment that I'm talking to you, nobody has ever reached out to me and said, here are the threats.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe that's because the threats weren't against her, but were monetary threats against USC.
That part, the donors, do they, the boosters, or whatever the fuck they're called, the Alumni Association. Let's be real, sis. Let's be real. It is not about her. It is the safety of the USC. They're concerned, the only safety they're concerned about is the safety of their coffers and to protect the coffers of USC from the donors.
Once again, there's a line from Blazing Saddles for everything. Gentlemen, we could lose our phony baloney jobs.
Right. We can lose our jobs.
And what I said the other night remains true. If that young woman had been blonde-haired and blue-eyed and had stood up at the podium and yelled, Slava Ukraina, she would have gotten a standing ovation.
Right. But she ain't.
But this young woman cannot even say, Free Palestine.
Right. Because it's anti-Semitic. You know, you hate the Jews because... You want?
It's anti-Semitic to object to 34,000, including 22,000 women and children, dead, slaughtered by an AI that Israel turned loose.
But now let us not forget, sis. Let us not forget. You know the. But it's getting to the point that if you say anything, like, you know, if you bring Netanyahu a cup of cold coffee, I think he's, then, oh, you're anti-Semitic. Look, buddy, I swear on black baby Jesus that I don't have a problem with Jewish folks just because I bought you a cup of cold coffee. It has gotten out of hand, and I just don't understand. It's just making me sick to my stomach that the only people that are being sanctioned are the people who have the most to lose, or I'm sorry, who have lost the most.
Yeah, I mean, if the Israeli electorate would go to the polls and throw out these shitbirds and put in a government that wasn't a gang of bloodthirsty maniacs. I mean, I was about to say, I see no distinction between Bibi Netanyahu and what's-his-fuck Ben-Gavir and Beelzebub Smotrich and the rest of those ugly fascists and Hamas. But I do see a difference between them. Hamas killed 1,200 people.
1,200.
This gang of bloody-minded fascists has slaughtered north of 34,000. They killed 16 children in one strike. Including, it was 15 children and four adults until little Sabrine died, and then it went to 16. And where's the accountability?
Where is the accountability?
I mean, it was 1 week ago when just as the program was coming to a close, it was about this time. I mean, not coming to a close, but you know, that I saw the news come across that the United States had vetoed the petition for recognition of Palestine in the UN.
Yeah, because
made
playing,
me sick.
I don't get to hear the show very often because I'm thinking, and when I'm driving, and I'm like, oh shit, I could be listening to Robin's show. And by the time I remember that, the show's almost over. So I had just tuned in on that day because you were playing the, because it was going on live and you were playing the audio. And you're like, my French is worse than this. And, you know, my Mandarin is even worse than my. It was a good bit, sis. It was really good.
Oh, thank you.
And then you were saying how these people are signing on to recognize Palestine as in the Union. Is that what it was, right? As a.
Yeah, yeah.
As a member. And then our fucking country vetoed it. How can they have just abstained?
Right.
And at that point, I was done. But you, because you screamed, my head exploded. And I'm like, it could have just abstained. Because again, we've had these discussions about being political grown-ups. And we know how shit has to work in order to get shit done. And there's a lot of stuff that people, that our government does that we definitely wholly disagree. And especially what's happening with it in Palestine. But they had a glimmer of hope to maybe get some, you know, to get the recognition and whatever steps, you know. But, and see, you know, instead of us, you know, growing a set and just abstaining, you just straight out said, fuck y'all, fuck you Palestinians, you vetoed it.
Well, this is a grim little Ramalama ding dong, but it goes out to Randy Radar. Sorry, there's going to be singing involved. By the way, if we could meet the $25 challenge from Joey, that would be fantastic. That would get us down to $14.25 to finish April. And, well, bills are waiting, and they're serious bills. All bills are serious. I don't have any frivolous bills.
Yeah.
But there will be singing. Springtime for Bibi and Israel. I mean, it fits.
Yep.
And this is important. This came from Ron in Raleigh. Don't forget, Roxanne. Since October 7th, 507 Palestinians have been killed by settlers in the West Bank. Bezalel Smotrich doing God's work erasing Palestinians. Oddly enough, there are no Hamas in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
But John Kirby has the nerve to say this is not a genocide, this is a war with too many civilian casualties. Jesus, one seven-month-old premature baby dying is too many civilian casualties, John Kirby.
These people.
And what drives me bananas is that President Biden has done a fantastic job during his term, and I've got this just sickening fear in the pit of my stomach, Tracy, that this is going to hang around his neck the way Vietnam hung around LBJ's.
That part.
It's starting to feel a lot like it. Hi, everybody. Happy Friday.
Hey, Christopher.
Or not so happy as the case may be. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of the rhetoric that we're hearing come out of the Biden camp, They're trying to dance on the head of a pin, right?
Oh, you idiot.
That was not for you, Christopher, I feel certain.
Yeah, I know. I know. She's driving in L.A. I know that. But,
wasn't there a song in the 80s, Driving in L.A.?
Yes. Nobody wants to be in L.A.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
Because she had that little the vocalist had that cute little crack in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a cute song. But the other thing that Jewish people in general, specifically the Israeli populace, and everyone who cares about the existence of the state of Israel, is going to rue the day when the definition of anti-Semitism has been so distorted.
Well, did you see where Did you see where Bernie Sanders burnt BB all the way to the ground?
I didn't see Bernie.
Oh no, this was good.
This was Phil the Burn? Literally Phil the Burn?
Yeah, BB felt the burn. he issued a press release, and I think he also did it on video, too. Because BB had the unmitigated gall to tell Bernie fucking Sanders.
Uh-oh. That he wasn't a good Jew or something?
He didn't get quite up to self-hating Jew, but it was sort of breathing from the words. He released this statement after Psycho BB said criticizing Israeli government policies is anti-Semitic.
Here we go.
That's setting it up on the tee for Bernie.
And he's got one of them Callaway Big Bertha drivers, Christopher.
Yes.
Robin, make sure
Cinderella story.
Cinderella story.
Make sure you say you do it in with your best Bernie Sanders imitation voice when you read the statement.
Right? No, I'm gonna read it straight because I don't want to. This is not a bit.
Okay.
No, Mr. Netanyahu, it is not anti-Semitic or pro-Hamas to point out that in a little over 6 months, your extremist government has killed 34,000 Palestinians and wounded more than 77,000, 70% of whom are women and children. It is not anti-Semitic to point out that your bombing has completely destroyed more than 221,000 housing units in Gaza, leaving more than 1 million people homeless, almost half the population. It is not anti-Semitic to note that your government has obliterated Gaza's civilian infrastructure, electricity, water, and sewage. It is not anti-Semitic to realize that your government has annihilated Gaza's healthcare system, knocking 26 hospitals out of service and killing more than 400 healthcare workers. It is not anti-Semitic to condemn your government's destruction of all of Gaza's 12 universities and 56 of its schools, with hundreds more damaged, leaving 625,000 students with no education. It is not anti-Semitic to agree with virtually every humanitarian organization in saying that your government, in violation of American law, has unreasonably blocked humanitarian aid coming into Gaza, creating the conditions in which hundreds of thousands of children face malnutrition and famine. Mr. Netanyahu, and there's not a comma there, it's a period. Mr. Netanyahu, anti-Semitism is a vile and disgusting form of bigotry that has done unspeakable harm to many millions of people. But please, do not insult the intelligence of the American people by attempting to distract us from the immoral and illegal war policies of your extremist and racist government. Do not use anti-Semitism to deflect attention from the criminal indictment you are facing in the Israeli courts. It is not anti-Semitic to hold you accountable for your actions. God bless America.
And did he say wearing the mittens, too?
I don't know if there were mittens involved.
Okay.
Mic drop.
Yeah, mic drop. No doubt.
What? Yeah. By the way, can I say something real quick? I'm just home lying down.
You can say anything you want. It's a regular joint, Steve.
Okay. By the way, Roger, thank you. I actually tested. I am negative for COVID, so.
Now you've got that shit-eating flu. Takes a while to get from the Gulf Coast to the mean streets of Manhattan, I guess.
Well, that's good news to hear that it's not COVID.
Yeah, it is good news. But, speaking of this Israel stuff, I think we all have a huge education undertaking to... A huge education journey to undertake. We need to start asking questions. What happened in 1948? Why did what made Hamas form in 1987? Why was there no need for that group to form for those 40 years? Why? And lest anyone think that I'm seeking to justify, I'm not justifying anything. I make a huge distinction between a reason people do things and an excuse for why they do things. For instance, what happened on 9/11? There is no excuse, as far as I'm concerned, for killing people. I don't like to kill things. I've been on here talking about that. But
hell, we're on here this evening, Steve, outraged about a psychopathic South Dakota governor bragging about offing a 14-month-old puppy.
Exactly. But might it be worth it to say, what would make people say, you know what, the only way we're going to get people to listen to us is to fly planes into buildings? That doesn't justify it, but it might it be a first step in at least understanding, you know, and I know I'm going to get a lot of pushback here.
I don't know that you are.
And it's all, well, about what I'm about to say. I don't know enough about Hamas. I do know that Hamas grew out of the Muslim Brotherhood, but it had the exact reversed methods of acting than the Muslim Brotherhood did. Apparently, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is out of Egypt, the goal was to convert people, which would lead to a Muslim country. The Hamas, it was a nationalistic movement of let's get our land and then we'll make people Muslim. That's kind of the way, and if I'm wrong, I apologize. But I keep thinking about this. Why? Why did they do on October 7th? Why? And I don't justify it. I hate that.
No, here's the problem we run across, and I'm not trying to interrupt you, but you've raised a couple of really good points. You always do, Steve. One, I'm so old, I can remember the aftermath
How
of September.
How old are you?
I can remember the aftermath of September 11th, 2001, and I can remember what happened when we said, you know, we really do need to understand why they did this. And the loyal Bushies and the Republicans and the war hawks and the blood and the people hopping up and down with their veins in their teeth yelling kill, 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 said, "Ty, you're a bunch of sissy liberals who want to have a therapy session with the terrorists." And yeah. I remember back then saying, you know, it might actually be a good idea to understand why they did this. Well, it might actually be a good idea to connect the dots. But the other thing that I also want to point out is that even though Hamas sucks, somehow or another, even though Hamas had political, social, and governmental control of Gaza, some of the oldest Christian churches in Christendom itself managed to survive unmolested. And Christians moved among Muslims, and Muslims moved among Christians, and no problem. I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but Hamas never snipered a woman trying to run to her daughter who had already been snipered. Hamas didn't do that. But by God, Israel did. Hamas never bombed a Christian church, but by God, Israel did. The Palestinian Authority in the West Bank never bombed Bethlehem on fucking Christmas, but Israel did. Now, I am not a Christian, but I do understand optics. And it absolutely astonished me the way that those two stories were simply not reported. Because it would have been
anti-Semitic, yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been anti-Semitic to report that.
And the hell it is.
Right. Well, and Steve, to go back to it, you sparked my memory with Reverend Wright, Obama's Reverend, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
When he said chickens were coming.
Obama, the secret Muslim who went to that radical Christian preacher's church. Yeah, him.
Yeah. Right. And he said chickens were coming home to roost, and everybody was outraged. And he was like, oh, they're anti-American, blah, blah, blah. No, but it goes to what you were saying. It's important to ask the questions why. You know, it just didn't get up one morning and say, hey, let's learn how to fly planes so we can fly them into the World Trade Center just for fun. You know?
I'm having a hard time, and I only ask these questions because I don't know. I don't ask them with an intended answer. But think about the IRA. I have a friend of mine who's only a second generation American. When he grew up, he lived with his grandparents who were from the old country. So he and I had a conversation, and he said to me, he says, you know, I didn't like a lot of what the IRA did. But at the same time, I'm not looking for an excuse, but I would like to say to somebody who was one of those bombers, what made you feel the need to do that? What made you think you needed to do that rather than not do that?
Well, I mean, you look at this and say, and you say, why? I mean, MLK said back in 66, a riot is a voice of the unheard.
Mm-hmm.
We are tired of, you know, with the black, you know, the formation of the Black Lives Matter movement, about at some point, black lives have to matter. And I'm coming from this as somebody who has witnessed police police brutality, as someone who has been caught up in the criminal injustice system. When you see firsthand and you are living a life and you're watching how your community is being destroyed by drugs brought in by the, you know, by the government, when you are actually suffering state sanctioned violence. I mean, let's face it, this is what has happened in my community and brown communities, and what is happening in Palestine and on the Gaza Strip. This is state sanctioned violence against a group of people who have nothing to do with Hamas. I have, you know, and it's just some sick shit when people try to speak out against this state sanctioned violence. And we are called, you know, in the case of what's happening in Gaza, we speak out, you're anti-Semitic. If we speak out, if people speak out about the injustices put upon people who look like me, oh, you are anti-American, and you just, you know, we have to do something about this crime, but not asking, well, not even examining why there are issues with crime. Why about, you know, disinvestment in our communities, the, you know, drugs coming into our communities, people taking away good, well-paying union blue-collar jobs when they close up the factories and sent that shit overseas, or even worse yet, sent them into the suburbs. All these things, when you destroy our, you know, you destroy our neighborhoods with freeways and call it eminent domain. When you let the corporations become landlords and kicking people out of their homes, and nothing is done, people are fucking tired. And it gets, you know, and I abhor violence. I do not like people, you know, the whole thing about, you know, riots and stuff like that. Because I was one of these people before, you know, I got a little bit of an education. And I would be the first one to get mad at my people for tearing up their neighborhoods. And there, during in 2020, I wish I could find that sister, because, you know, when all the protests were going on, and there was some bad actors who who were coming in like they're doing at these protests on these college campuses. They're not students. They're just people trying to stir up the shit. But one of the things that this sister says, she was in Atlanta, and she's like, you're lucky, and she's, and when, and the we, the you is the, you know, everybody else, and the we are black people. You're lucky that the only thing we want, justice, what, I forget what she says, or something, equity, and not revenge. We don't want revenge. And if we did want revenge, God help the, if black people finally decided at what, at some point to come together, not only black people, but brown folks as well, and said we want revenge, oh my God, we would be Hamas. But that's not what we want. We just want to be treated as Americans. Like this white, like when this little child, this little white girl gave me shit at this restaurant one day and said, well, I don't like the way you looked at me. And my response to her, when I said, she said, I said, I need you to treat me like you would treat a white woman. Because if I was white, you wouldn't have fixed your mouth to say what you said to me, besides the fact I'm old enough to probably be your grandmother. But you thought it was okay, because I'm black, to talk to me in your kind of way. She's like, I didn't bitch slap her little ass. But then again, I wouldn't do that. That's case in point. There are so many times that I would love to end, you know, just to literally to bitch slap somebody. But that's not how I work. But I understand the feelings of wanting to, because I hate to say that I have been in situations more often than not when I have been mistreated or talked to like somebody was crazy for no other reason but other than the color of my skin. And because, like I said, if I was a white woman, nobody would even think about talking to me in that way.
Well, answer me this, guys. Tell me if I'm wrong or if I'm missing something. But when I'm seeing coverage of the Zionist protests, right, and they're all chanting "River to the Sea," the for-profit media seems to be giving them a pass and labeling those type protests as legitimate, you know, First Amendment rights, yada, yada. But when the pro-Palestinian protests, when they're saying the exact same thing, "River to the Sea," they get pilloried. They're called illegitimate protests, violent protests, and anti-Semitic. Now, I think both camps are wrong.
I want to interrupt and say that's because one side has a much better PR apparatus than the other does.
That part.
Yeah.
I think they're both wrong. I do too. Yeah. But while we're at it, Israel already has "From the River to the Sea."
Basically, yeah. I mean, there's no pushback in West Bank on what they're doing there. And that's terrorism. What they're doing in West Bank.
Yeah. Yes.
Does everyone know where that sentiment actually came from?
Well, let me just wrap this up real quick. Like I said, Israel already has that. On the other hand, Gaza and the West Bank are deliberately bifurcated. Bibi and his fascist thugs allowed funding to flow to Hamas specifically to keep it that way, to keep Hamas at the PA's throat and vice versa. But a realistic two-state solution actually has to provide a means whereby the West Bank and Gaza are contiguously joined. Does it not?
I've always thought that logistically how you do that is going to be, I don't know how you do that, where you draw those lines and how you redraw those lines. I don't know.
If you consider what happened with Sykes-Picot in, what, 1919? You know, those lines were all arbitrarily drawn.
Sure.
Transjordan, You'll notice they took the trans off.
Okay.
Iraq, Syria, Lebanon were all just arbitrarily drawn by some English and French map makers sipping sherry somewhere. Because
Because
they were carving up the old Ottoman Empire.
A rather imperfect solution to the West Bank and Gaza is like the autobahn that went between West Germany and West Berlin. And as I said, it's an imperfect solution, but it does give a transportation corridor that belongs to the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, so they can transfer anything between the two without being harassed by Israeli customs.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think if you wanted to just come up with something that connected the two, you could come across from Gaza along the Egyptian frontier and go north from there to the West Bank. I mean, the Israelis themselves pulled all of their earlier illegal settlers out of Gaza. They could remove anyone who's in that designated area. It would be extremely geographically silly, but this is a geographically silly section of the world. People draw geographically silly borders and lines of demarcation all the time. I mean, look at the line of demarcation between Portugal and Spain in South America. Look at the shape of West Virginia, for Christ's sakes.
Look at the stupidity of the states in the United States. We're east of the Mississippi River. They're basically on geographic boundaries, and west of the Mississippi are straight lines drawn on a map.
Yeah, you got to wonder how the indigenous people felt about that.
Well, I don't think the U.S. government ever gave a shit about the indigenous people. Go ahead.
I don't think a two-state solution is the best solution.
I was just thinking that, Steve. But go, expound on that.
I think a secular one-state solution is the solution. And I will tell you, we have, in very recent memory, a model to do that. It's called South Africa. But I think, and again, I'm just spitballing here because I don't really know. So I wish I could talk to a historian about this. But I think, where I think it was doable in South Africa, because let's be frank here, we had basically a colonial occupying group of people, the Afrikaans, the Dutch, some English, and you had the native peoples. And there were other, I do know enough about South Africa to know that it was not a black-white issue. There were actually five different categories in their racial bullshit. But anyway, but I think one of the things that allowed that to happen was they went through that Truth and Reconciliation Commission stuff. People got the opportunity to air their grievances so that people got to hear, hey, this happened. And again, maybe I'm wrong, but I surmise that served as kind of like a safety valve to let the steam out to begin to reconcile.
The healing.
I
was thinking the same thing. If you, the two-state solution, I mean, it sounds good on paper, but I think it's more of a short-term remedy, because just imagine, in the long run, you have two ethno-states side by side, an ethno-Palestinian state and an ethno-Jewish state. At some point, they're going to come back to loggerheads again, right? If the wrong right-wing tool bag comes into power on either side, it's going to be on like Donkey Kong again. So what you're saying, Steve, makes a lot of sense for the long run, that it has to be a one-state solution. But Jewish people are petrified of that because if the Palestinians, you know, a lot like in this country, right? The Browning of America is what we hear. And so the white racist folk are petrified of that.
And you know what? I've heard people say that. And granted, this isn't my idea, by the way. This is, I've heard this other place. So I am not, don't anybody think that I'm original. I'm not. But let's think about something. If you say, and this is one of the things I've heard, is that a lot of Israeli Jews think, well, if we let that happen, the Arabs / Muslims will vote us out of power and they'll vote us out of existence. That's a I understand that's a legitimate view, but it's also inherently racist. The notion that because I am Muslim or I am Arab dictates how I will vote in every instance is no better than saying, well, we can't allow black folks and brown folks to get power here. They'll just vote us out of existence.
Yeah, we got to throw them off the voter rolls, right?
But the point is that nobody, no group is a monolith.
Right.
And that the real problem is an ethno state or a religious state. That's the problem. It seems to me. And again, hey, I don't want to hog here. Like I said, Robin, when I first started talking, these are just observations. I don't know.
This is hard.
If this conflict has done anything for me, it's made me start to ask questions. What about this? What about that? What about this? Why, like I said earlier, Hamas didn't come into existence in 1987. Why? Israel had existence since 1948, so that's almost 40 years. Why? What was the reason that happened? I don't know. I don't have any conceived answer. I don't know.
Well, is Hamas the stepchild of Yasser Arafat's Palestine Liberation Organization or not? No.
Okay. No.
They're an offshoot of the Brotherhood, right? The
Muslim Brotherhood.
And they're they're financed by Iran. Well, let me add one little factor in here, because this is actually kind of groundbreaking. There was and this is even before Israel slaughtered the world's central kitchen workers. Probably again with their stupid goddamned AI. An organization called Action for Humanity, which is one of the leading NGOs that works in Gaza, they commissioned polling by YouGov in the UK, and they saw something come out of that polling that they had never seen before. 56% of UK respondents are now desirous of ending any arms exports to Israel. Only 17% are against ending it. So at that point, 73%. So 27% are uncertain. But 56% of UK citizens saying, no, stop it, we don't want any part of this, is earth-shattering. And the thing is, what we're seeing with the protests and demonstrations on college campuses in America, those are college kids. They are not alone. There is something repulsive about the United States saying, you know, hit them again, I can put a little stank on it. And like I said, if the Biden administration doesn't find some way forward, the doom that comes for us out of it is almost inexpressible. But I got to wrap things up. We're out of time. We have thank you, Ralphs, and thank you, Emilio. We have basically $8 more to go on Joey's challenge. Thank you, Joey. And if that happens, we'll be down to 1425 to finish April. Sorry to talk so much about it. Meanwhile, an anonymous, our kind anonymous internet friend, liked my singing. Can't possibly be. But here's a weekend update, springtime for BB challenge, $50 doubling challenge. If that's met, we'll be down to $13.25. And I promise I'll never sing it again if that gets matched over the coming, well, maybe the overnight crew or somebody even right now. But it would be great if we could. These are hard conversations. By the way, go over to Substack. Thank you, Ralphs, for sending it to me. Go over to Substack and read Steve Schmidt's piece on Christy Noem. He really does a good job deconstructing her vileness. And with his characteristic style, he pulls no punches. But thanks for a good conversation this evening.
Hey, Robin, did you see the $8?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. So, okay. Joey's challenge is met. The springtime for BB challenge is on the table to the tune of 50. And everything is important at this point because every penny that comes in is going to be necessary by month's end. I'm so sorry. I wish I was independently wealthy. But thanks. Thanks for a great discussion, everyone, all the way around. Thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our challenge makers. Oh, Herman, thank you. Herman answered the question. I was being facetious about the song driving with Tracy, you know, driving in L.A. For anybody who's paying attention, it's actually Walking in L.A. I thought it was. It was by Missing Persons, Herman tells us. It's from 1982's Spring Session M. The lead singer, Dale Bozzio, is still very much alive, and she just recently turned 69. Thanks for all that information. That makes an old DJ very happy to hear. Thank you, Herman. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our challenge makers and respondents and our a la carte contributors. Thank you so very much. You are why this program continues to exist more than two decades. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room and in the old holler tree. Thanks to you, too, Jeremy. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, please, if you're a podcast listener, well, tell your friends and neighbors, all of, well, at least the ones who would be inclined to join in this conversation. And like each episode, please, if you're not subscribed, subscribe to a couple of platforms so that when Apple Podcasts screw up, you'll know there's still a show. Leave a comment here and there. I say it every night. It helps so much, more than you can imagine. And it takes almost no time at all. I got some writing to do over the weekend. I got signs to put out over the weekend. It's going to be a busy weekend. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, Ben is shuttering WhiteRoseSociety.org on June the 1st. If there's anything there you want, go and download it. It's like a time capsule of progressive talk. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia and a proud union shop. Please, stay safe. Keep an eye out for when you get your boosters. Steve, you go get you some Theraflu or have it delivered or something. You live in New York. Wear your mask when you're around the maggots. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. And for God's sakes, if Christy Nome comes toward you, I hated that dog. Well, avoid that extra from the road company of Yellowstone like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.